Off the Ball.
GAA.
And the most important thing for Hurling is not necessarily money. It's the space to breathe as a game. Because there are brilliant volunteers all over Ireland trying to promote the game. But you can't promote the game if you haven't got the time to play it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. Loads coming your way between now and 10 o'clock tonight. We've got Darren O'Sullivan talking Gaelic football from 7:30. We've got Dennis Walsh and Ryan O'Dwyer on the hurling from 8 p.m. We've got Alison Miller talking rugby and Ireland's defeat to France in the Women's Six Nations from 8:40. And then Kevin Kilbane between 9 and 10 on the football show. We will, of course, be keeping you updated on Manchester United's clash with Brentford throughout the evening. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to drop us a message on WhatsApp. Stephen Doyle will be delivering the news round very shortly. Steve-O, how are you doing?
Good evening, very well.
Mick McCarthy is back with us. How are you, Mick?
Hello.
And how are you, Arthur O'Dea?
Good. How are you?
Very well. I think I'm not going out on a limb to say this, but I think that Conor Laverty's background on his phone is the most iconic sporting background on a mobile phone ever. It's a crowded market, right? It's Arthur, you were mentioning earlier some other famous instances of phone backgrounds.
Correct, and you'll know this. Jackie Tyrrell had a thing about Lara Corbett, didn't he?
I'm not sure.
I think, because I know I read his book and it must have been after 2010, but I'm almost certain. If someone can double check that for me, someone will know, but I am almost certain. I can't remember who else of a Kilkenny book I'd been reading that would have been doing that.
Yeah, like, I mean, most people will have a photograph of a child or of a pet or of a loved one or of a beautiful landscape that they've taken themselves, but I just think it's more beautiful that a blurry photo of a typo on an RT Sport website is actually what is your background photo for 3 full weeks. And to be fair, there's a long line of people saying we are written off by absolutely everybody, and I think it's the most overused phrase in Gaelic games. But I think literally being erased from a television schedule in Gaelic games is being written off. That is close to being the literal thing that being written off is.
Yeah.
So it all plays into it. The one thing I would just warn, and I think a lot of other people have surely picked up on this as well, is that Conor Laverty needs to change his passcode.
Because on the video
that Neil Loughran posted, you can clearly see what his passcode is. So Conor Laverty, if you happen to be listening, please change your passcode now. The hackers have got very good at this thing.
Fingerprint, Conor. That's the
phone. You got to be really careful with your phone as a sports person, as a certain new Shamrock Rovers signing found out earlier in this season.
Oh yeah,
but we will not divulge any further details now because it's not after 9 o'clock. So
Jolyon Lescott would be the PG version of that sort of story.
Exactly. So just keep your phone out of view of the TV cameras if you are a sports person. That's all I'd say.
I did like one more thing about Conor Laverty saying that it was a really tough few weeks with all the training they did, and in the middle of lambing season as well.
Yeah,
which is. Does sound pretty hard, I'd imagine, if you are a sheep farmer. But you say there, like, I usually have a little bit. It's not that I don't understand it, but when it's dressing room wall material, I always feel like they're suspending disbelief a little bit with things like that. You know, it's like there is an element of like I'm forcing myself to be offended by these things to try and get a lift, and I always wonder there's a diminishing returns element to that. Then because is anybody really bought in? I think in this case, this is absolutely worthy. Like, I would imagine this really pissed off them. It pissed off him, obviously, but I'd imagine it was an easy enough message to get through to the players. Because it is kind of outrageous. Everybody looked at the Ulster Football Championship draw and said, whoever wins that first round match between Armagh and Tyrone will be playing Donegal in the semi-final.
Mm.
You know? It happened elsewhere. I won't say that they were written off or by who, but in this very studio, the day after the Armagh Tyrone game, a pundit was describing Armagh's next game as being against Donegal. You know, even though they had to play for Mana, and obviously Donegal had to play down. So there was an assumption it was more than just like a typo on an RT website. They were very much forgotten about. And when you think about their performance against Galway in the championship last year, this is a dangerous team. You know, and I wonder, kind of, we all sort of, if we'd look back on it, would have thought they had a performance in them, like.
Yeah.
Goal scoring, heavy scoring team, the type that could give anyone a problem on their day.
And also, possibly one of the other dangerous things coming into this was the fact that Donegal won the league. The league just seems to be
league curse,
a satiating thing for a lot of counties, like Dublin and Kerry, given how you know, how much easier their provinces are compared to Connacht and Ulster, have been able to do winning the league and winning their province in back-to-back months, no problem over the years. But like Derry 2 years ago, get hockeyed by Donegal, first game of the Ulster Championship after winning the league. Mayo the year beforehand, win the National League, get beaten by Roscommon, first day out. Go back to 2019, Mayo beat New York after winning the league, but then they lose to Roscommon. Like, there's a bit of a trend there. I think that's almost as big a part of the story in terms of motivation or lack thereof yesterday afternoon as Down being written off was. I think there's a strange mental aspect there, especially when you've won that league final so handsomely, as Donegal did last month. So
it's there'll be a slew of managers now getting on towards his... Any chance you'll just scratch our team's name off the old fixture list there? This is just pure motivation here.
I just do wonder about like whether Fermanagh also had it up on their dressing room wall.
We never hear of the dressing room wall material that never ends in victory. There's reams and reams of this stuff. There's so many people looking at their screensavers now of them being written off, and then they have to change it back to their pet dog.
Oh, they were right.
They were right to write us off above in Dublin. We should chat about the hurling here before we get into the news round. It's weird watching a game and knowing that after about half an hour you're watching another great. I was going to say all-time great there, but I think there are so many great Cork versus Limerick matches that maybe all-time great. You need to kind of hold back on the hyperbole a little bit. But again, after around half an hour, maybe half an hour is late for people to come to this conclusion yesterday afternoon, watching on in Parky Grieve, you're like, okay, this is an absolutely unbelievable game. I'm going to be fully locked in on this all the way until minute 70 here, because you just have to appreciate these sorts of sports events that deliver high stakes and high quality minute in, minute out.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I had this kind of moment watch earlier. You know, you're kind of watching it going, who's good, who's bad, who's playing well, who's not. And it was that kind of like 25, 30 minutes in where you're just sort of going, God, this is a great match. It was really, the second half, I don't think really did live up to it in the same way. I don't think Limerick played as well in the second half in general. But in the first half, you had Limerick coming out like a house on fire and like playing really well, I thought. And Cork answering them much quicker than they did in the league final. Obviously, with much higher intensity and higher stakes and so on. But Cork answered them much quicker, stayed in it. There was 2 points in at half time. But Limerick, like I thought, like Limerick's forwards work rate was unbelievable. There was so much of that, like of, you know, Peter Casey and Gerard Hegarty and all getting back and closing a guy just before he's clearing it when you don't see them coming and all this. Like, this is a really high quality game. The second half, it didn't peter out in terms of the scoreline, but I do think it petered out in terms of a lot of that sort of stuff.
It must be so annoying playing in those circumstances where you're like, just let me play the sport here, as opposed to four of your players constantly hounding me. I didn't know how it was possible for a Cork back to be coming out with the ball and for there always to be exactly four Limerick men hounding them and smothering them. Like, it kind of looked like somebody trying to play hurling in a car wash, like in a very sort of condensed, annoying, sort of overly turbulent place. And then I guess it's only natural that would sort of wane a little bit as the game went on. But there's one key moment in this game. Like, I mean, the margin of victory at the end is the same margin that Cork had before Keane Lynch gets sent off. I think if he doesn't get sent off, and it's an idiotic thing to do, especially to swing back twice, I think Limerick win this game.
Maybe. It's funny, what I was thinking of afterwards was that, again, the 2 points, it's like, that's, and it's not to be too simplistic, but it's like, oh, that's the goal Galan gets. You know, that kind of way where it's like, not that he's not guaranteed goal a game, but you're like, almost certainly he's the one who'll come up with it. And that was my first thinking on it. The 14, yeah, it's probably, I mean, it did. You could see it at the end. It was a bit, that element of it where it's like the constant rushing had stopped. And it's like, geez, even one man out of this and it's a lot more space all of a sudden combined with the tiring bodies. So it probably did match. Like, I think, to be honest with you though, it gives them more concern for next week than I think it'll be an issue. I think they could have lost on Sunday either way and there'd be no great things dug up about it. Like, the nature of the defeat, you could win that by 2 points, lose that by 2 points. I don't think it would tell you much more about what's going to happen the next time they meet, if they meet again. But the loss now of Lynch on top of Galan having to go to Ennis is arguably, I think, where that'll really tell. That'll be the real actual pinch point of, you'll feel the effects of that mistake on his part then.
Yeah. A couple of things. I want to go back on that Limerick point, but just can I have a moment of hurling evangelism for a second, right?
Of course.
Because it's like,
now's
it's like,
your time.
You know, they say that we love to do this, but it's so much so that you almost don't do it sometimes. Because it's like, it's seen as a kind of a this weird snobbery thing that you're not allowed to talk about liking something, you know? But there was a moment in the first half where Brian Hayes gets this unbelievable score where there's like a brilliant move by Cork and they play a kind of a wasted ball in and he stops it from going out over the end line.
Yeah.
And he turns around and he hits the point from the end line. And then from the puck out, Shane O'Brien gets it and, you know, taps it over somebody's head and gets like this ridiculous score. And you're like, how could these two things have happened in the space of 30 seconds? You're just like, what a sport we have here. But anyway, just like that, that's just, they were just two moments of just like full heart joy. That when you're watching there as a neutral, that happened honestly within the space of 30 seconds of each other. The thing probably more valuable to the conversation, though, that about Limerick is there was this question of whether they're back this year or not, like, and whether they have that this kind of like renewed hunger and everything like that, that I think is evidently there. But it's like, is there enough left in the legs? And are the new players replacing the older players and so on? They were so good in the first half, I thought the answer was unquestionably yes. But funny enough, it's when you judge them is in the second half, and definitely the second half of the second half. And it did feel as that, I know they were playing with 14, so there was an element of the swarming ability for Cork that was there. But it did feel like they didn't have as much left. And you do think then, it's like when that comes down to it, when we get into further on in the season, more miles in the legs and so on, like, is there a chance that this Limerick team are just past that peak? And you only have to be a tiny bit past it for a couple of teams to come and pass you out, you know? And maybe the last couple of years haven't been off years so much as just a team that's just that very, very slightly back to the pack. Like.
Yeah, and Dennis Walsh was writing about that in the Irish Times today. He's going to be one of our voices after 8 o'clock about the depth for Limerick and the next generation coming through. But on the hurling being great piece, I think the Munster Hurling Championship has delivered exactly what you'd expect so far. Four brilliant games from four. Like, yesterday was an annoying enough afternoon because, especially after that Cork game, you just wanted to lock in on one game, and I expected that to be Mayo versus Roscommon in the 4 o'clock, and then you hear what's going on in Donegal down in the Cork Grand.
Yeah,
GA plus the second screen. So, but I had kind of written off Waterford Tip naturally at halftime, 11 point gap in that. And it was only when that game started to get good again when I turned back up the volume on GA plus, and it was just Tommy Walsh. The first thing I heard was, hurling is just an unbelievable game. And it was himself and Dave McIntyre doing a brilliant job calling that match. And it really is just an unbelievable game. I don't think you can say it enough in the month of April, because it kind of peaks here, and it's over the next few weeks, at the start of May as well.
Well, as a true hurling snob from Dublin, can we start talking about maybe Dublin beating Kildare yesterday and TJ Reid becoming the record championship scorer of all time?
Answer, Josh. Yeah,
we can, of course, go for it, Steve.
We're going to give Fergal Whiteley his flowers yesterday for a fabulous performance against Kildare. Absolutely brilliant stuff.
Do you want to actually...
Dublin is a hurling county once again.
We will do. We will get to that, but I think in terms of the hurling news...
Back to bloody like, Munster again.
I do think that
here we go.
The Cork injury, Cork injuries are probably top of the script, Steve. Not to editorialise for you.
I was going to say to all the Leinster hurling fans out there, I tried my best, folks.
You also. Congratulations.
Well, anyway, the Cork Cedar Hurlers have been hit with a double injury blow. A scan this morning revealing that Kieran Joyce has torn a cruciate ligament. He sustained the season-ending injury in yesterday's Munster Championship win against Limerick. The All-Star defender relocated to full-back this year, came off just 5 minutes into yesterday's round two match on Leaside. Fellow defender Rob Downey will be out for 6 weeks after suffering torn ankle ligaments. The Rebels play their next match in Munster on May 9th against Waterford at Azuri Walsh Park. Cork boss Ben O'Connor spoke to our man Jonathan Higgins yesterday, saying he was thrilled with the win, but insisted afterwards the Treaty County are still the team to beat.
I suppose that's the most pleasing aspect, that we were down a point, and I suppose time running out and fellas looking at the clock, maybe a small bit of panic, but not the boys inside, and we got the last few scores. That just shows the amount of work the lads have done in the last 6 or 7 months with Eric Baxter and Jory Hussey as well. So I suppose everything came together today, but look, no doubt Limerick are still the team to beat, and they'll be there at the end of the championship.
Yeah, we're just saying here that we haven't given Cork enough credit for yesterday.
Again, if there's two sides of a good game, we should probably talk about the team that won the good game at some point, like, you know. So
the big winners as a result of this discussion are Or Cork. In many ways, we've written Cork off for the All-Ireland front by not giving them their flowers.
They don't want the hype this year. They want to be under the radar. I don't think it's going to happen somehow when they bring 60,000 people to every match or 40,000, whatever it is. But
every time Ben O'Connor opens his phone, his screensaver is a video of you saying Limerick are screwed, and that's the reason why Cork had such a great win against
him. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a weird screensaver to have and a complicated one, I would say, as well. But he'll manage it somehow.
Yeah.
But the injuries are tough. Like, they really are, because that was... It's any injuries are tough, any injuries, the top line players are tough, but say the Lynch and Galan ones, like, they're not areas of weakness, they're just two brilliant players. Whereas this is areas that Cork have, like, Kieran Joyce is not a full back, he has been put in there for the last couple of games, he was developing and played well against Hip last week, and it looked like that was going to be the answer to a few problems, and... They don't really have much of an answer to the centre either with Rob Downey's gone. So Cork losing players in the positions, they really can't afford to lose them least. Like, so it's interesting to see where that will go. Like, they're probably, you would imagine they're true now at this stage anyway, like, you know, and we'll be looking at Munster final minimum, but still a bit of work to do. Like,
Steve-O, you have the rest of the hurling news from the weekend.
All-Ireland champions Tipperary let an 11-point lead slip to draw Waterford in the Munster Championship. 324 to Tips, 130 was the full-time score. In the lowly Leinster Hurling Championship, Fergal Whiteley found the net twice as Dublin ran out 324 to 119 winners over Kildare at Parnell Park. TJ Reid became the top scorer in Championship history with his 1-8 haul in Kilkenny's win over Wexford. Now, Mayo boss Andy Moran admits they were beaten by a hungrier Roscommon team yesterday. Moran's charges led their football semi-final by 3 points at half-time in Castlebar, but the Rossies dominated the second half to win by 225 to 118. And I know you'll be chatting about this later on, so we won't go too deep. League champions Donegal dumped out of the Ulster Championship by Down in Letterkenny.
Yes, indeed. Darren O'Sullivan will be with us in around 15 minutes' time to discuss the weekend's Gaelic football action. On to Premier League football then. A big game tonight, Steve-O.
Yes, indeed. And we've got the teams there for Manchester United against Brentford. Two changes for Man U. Maguire coming in for Mazraoui, who drops to the bench. And we believe it's a groin injury that's kept Mateus Cunha out of the match, probably doing too much work on the surfboard over the weekend. Lomans in goal for United. Dallow, Maguire, Heaven and Shaw at the back with Casemiro, Mainoo holding midfield. Diallo plays in the right wing and Bouma on the left, of course, playing against his former club, and Fernandes behind Šeško. No changes for Brentford with Caoimhín Kelleher and Nathan Collins, the Irish axis at the back there, with Coyote, Vandenberg and Lewis Potter. Yarmolenko and Jensen, the two holding midfielders, with Ouattara, Damsgo and Shada, the attacking midfield, just behind Igor Thiago. Now, ahead of this game, of I should say, what's at stake for these two clubs. United looking to put a 3-point gap between themselves and Liverpool in the table, who are in fourth place. Those two, of course, meet at Old Trafford on Sunday, where I'll be for Off the Ball, their lively exclusive commentary of this match. A win this evening would also mean United are all but assured of a return to Champions League football next season. Still an outside chance that Keith Andrews could qualify the Bees for the Champions League in his first season in charge. A win at Old Trafford tonight would take them up to sixth place, which will be good enough, of course, if Aston Villa finish fifth and also win the Europa League. Brentford are in a bit of a rut at the moment, having drawn all five of their last league matches. And while they have a really good home record against the Red Devils, they haven't won at Old Trafford since 1937. Andrews is fully aware of how tough it'll be, and well, he's also been impressed by United under Michael Carrick.
I think it's just in that bracket of clubs where you want to go and really test yourself as a player, the environment and the team that you're facing, but the individuals that they'll be coming up against. I think it's a really, really tough test for us. Team that's playing well, clearly. Michael's gone playing really good football, and they've obviously been very, very effective in why he set them up over recent weeks and months. So I just think it's a game for us that we should attack, we should embrace the challenge of it. I think it's very evident that the spirit of the club and the spirit of the performances of what you would expect from a United team is there, really there in abundance. Probably very evident when they went 2-0 down against Leeds and down to 10 men, and they were able to control large parts of the second half. They've obviously got hugely talented players that can be deadly in moments, and I think those individuals are flourishing under Michael. There seems to be a real trust in what's in place, and it's really suiting the players that they have.
That's an 8 o'clock kickoff at Old Trafford.
Yes, indeed. We're live until 10 o'clock tonight, so we'll be keeping you up to speed on everything that happens there at Old Trafford. So you've got a couple of pieces of Arsenal news. You've got injury news on the men's front, and then some transfer news regarding our Irish player with the women's team.
Yes, indeed. Arsenal expecting Kai Havertz to play a part in their title run-in despite suffering a muscular injury against Newcastle on Saturday. He limped off in the first half of that win against the Geordies with an upper leg problem. The club aren't putting a definitive timescale on his recovery, but expect Havertz to play some part in their final four Premier League games. He'll most certainly miss the Champions League semi-final first leg against Atletico Madrid on Wednesday. He's already missed 6 months because of a knee issue this season, but has scored 5 goals in 19 appearances since his return in January. Now, Katie McCabe reportedly is being chased down by Manchester City, the front runners to land her signature. The Irish international is understood to be leaving her current club Arsenal at the end of the season alongside teammate Beth Mead. The Athletic are reporting Chelsea are also interested in signing the left wing back. And McCabe played her part in a 2-1 first leg win in their Champions League semi-final against Lyon yesterday. The second leg will be at Lyon's Groupama Stadium next Saturday at 2 o'clock.
I've seen a lot of people talk around the McCabe situation that Arsenal will be silly to let her go. If that's the truth, then she can prove them wrong pretty significantly and pretty swiftly by signing for a direct league rival, a team that is literally winning the WSL right now in Manchester City.
I got the impression it was a mutual, finish her career somewhere else, go new horizons kind of thing. She's going to go to City or Chelsea. Like, that's crazy on Arsenal's behalf.
They put out this message basically that it was they're looking to make sign younger players. They wanted to bring down the average age of the squad. Now, last week they gave Blackstenius an extended contract. She's the same age as Katie McCabe, maybe a few months younger. So that really goes against what the message was, and McCabe was told that they were saying that she could leave. Now, that would make me believe that there's something else going on there, and that they're not giving us the real reason why McKay's being let go, but she is absolutely at the level of playing for a Manchester City or a Chelsea, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely. What did you make of the men's team, man? I thought they'd get a narrow win. I have to say, it felt like it was time to get back on.
Well, the goals from corners had dried up, but Nicholas Jover came up with this
new way to score
from corners, which was take a short corner and work the ball to the edge of the box and shoot from the edge of the box, because he could have scored from a very similar worked corner before he actually did score, Eze. And I don't know, maybe he becomes an important player between now and the end of the season. I know there's some doubt about his fitness. He said it's precautionary when he got taken off during the week, but I think before his first injury, Eze was a really important player. He had started to come into form for Arsenal, and that was a really bad timed injury for him. So I don't know. Everybody seems to be predicting that it's going to be Atletico who wins this tie and Manchester City win the Premier League. So maybe things have shifted just a little bit where they can at least invent the sense of being an underdog.
Everyone's not predicting that. Most people are still saying Arsenal for the league,
including Opta.
They're heavily, heavily favourites, aren't they?
Let's see what our Kevin Kilbane is saying on the football show later.
I wouldn't be banking on either of them. They're both going to drop.
One of them's going to do it.
I wouldn't be banking on either. But they're both going to lose points between now and as the Atletico Madrid tie. On the face of it, you would say Atletico should win the match, but they're both capable.
If Arsenal play in any kind of form in the way they were earlier in the season, I'd bank them to beat Atletico Madrid. It just hasn't been there.
As I said, they might invent an underdog tag, which might have seemed fancy for 3-4 months ago, whereas this might actually be a little bit lighter.
And actually, if you were watching City on Saturday night, I don't think you'd have all that faith. The Burnley game, the Southampton game, I don't think they're back. What about Finnis Ass? When was the last time an Irish player scored a goal like that? Outside of Troy Parrott, obviously, who scores them every week. But did you hear Steven Gerrard on Steven Gerrard was on TNT commentary, and he just goes, I had him at Aston Villa, and you're like, oh right, here comes something. He goes, he's got it in his locker, Finn. Thanks, Stevie.
Where did you lose the key for that locker, Stephen? Did you while you were there?
He's got it.
Oh my god!
Earlier this afternoon, the office was glued to proceedings at the Crucible. Steve-O, what was going on?
What a match! I was only saying, how many times do you see two world champions who've won 11 world titles between them going toe to toe in a world championship. Like, it's so rare in any sport. But there you had it, John Higgins against Ronnie O'Sullivan. Ronnie O'Sullivan, of course, winning 7, trying to win that record 8 to get ahead of Stephen Hendry in the all-time list. John Higgins is going for a 5th now, because they did go level at 12-all earlier this afternoon, and O'Sullivan now has to wait for another year to try and break that world title record. They ended up in a final frame decider, which John Higgins won. Pretty scrappy towards the end of the match, it must be said. But the Rocket was spot on with his own analysis of his shortcomings, speaking after the game on the BBC.
Yeah, he played well, deserved his win, strong. If he plays like he did in that last session, he's got a chance, you know, winning a championship. No, I felt all right. I feel like I'm enjoying my game. I feel like I'm in a much better place for my game these last month than I have been in the previous 3 years. So, I've just missed too many key balls, you know, important balls, which you can't do. You know, this game is about playing well under pressure, and there were some pressure times out there, and I got a little bit tight. Maybe that's because I haven't won a tournament in, I don't know, 2.5 years. I haven't competed really in any matches like that, other than when I played Neil in the final. So, you know, it's like a little bit new territory for me again. So you just have to be grateful for what I got, and hopefully can build on that.
Yeah, I was watching that last night. He was 6-2 up after the first session, and he was right there when he said key shots that he missed, and it was those key shots in certain frames that he missed, and that really kind of led to his defeat. But Higgins will play the winner of Neil Robertson and Chris Wakelin next. Robertson, the 2010 winner, of course, was leading 10-6 going into the next final session of his match against Wakelin. They are still 10-6. That match is back underway. And Wu Yize, he beat Mark Selby, the four-time winner, by 13 frames to 11. The latest Chinese sensation, Asia's 22, is now in the quarterfinals, and he will face the winner of the Trump versus Iran match.
Hey.
Yeah. That's Judd Trump against Hossein Vafai of Iran. And Vafai has just won the first frame of the final session, so it's now 10-7 to Trump in that match.
Anyway, Trump loves those comparisons.
It's our generation's miracle on ice, you know. It's a proxy war happening on the bays at the
Crucible. Yes, indeed.
Today was so good, though, wasn't it? Like, where else would you get, like, in what other world would you get lads who've been professionals for 34 years going against each other in the like
legends football?
Yeah, exactly.
It's at the over top level. 30s masters football
to a final frame, which you so rarely see, and. Like, obviously, they're both not at their best, but, like, they're not that far off it, like, you know? But it's mad how, like, I love John Higgins. I'll be totally shouting for him for the rest of the tournament now. But it's mad how universal the Ronnie stuff is. Everybody was like, oh, it's the end of the tournament now. Ronnie's out. Like, you know, there's just not, does anybody not want Ronnie O'Sullivan to just win? It's like, I don't know when he reached that point in his career of just absolute universal approval.
Since the start, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it wouldn't bother me though.
That he's out?
No, not at all. No. Like some of it, no, not really.
The
like,
game's dying, Arthur, let's face it.
There's enough people around of interest.
Yeah. You'd like to see him win the 8.
Barry Hawkins still in it?
I don't know, he is the needle.
I don't know. Like, yeah, I guess maybe if for majority of people, maybe not watching the snooker. But like even watching over like Kyron Wilson won the UK, I think, over the thing. Amazing.
Dodgy
competition.
Q, he's out now.
Amazing. And was it the year before as well? Like I'm a fairly casual watcher, but I do like I like a bit of variety. The Ronnie stuff is a bit overwrought for me, to be honest with you. Mm. Oh, it's the kind of the maverick element of it, or the kind of the magic thing. It's like I know the story, like grand.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to him, not against it.
Yeah.
No, but I'm when the world zigs, not, you zag, let's
no,
say.
No. If he's out, I'm not like, oh, that's the tournament over. I think that's mad.
I feel like that was the reaction in the moment. I think people will still be back watching it tonight.
I think there's
you might just be skipping a first session. And then, oh, it's tight. I might hop on and bank holiday Monday, or and that's probably like the 17th session.
From my,
give us the rugby latest, Steve-O.
Yes, well, injury news is the news of the day, really. And it's mixed on the injury front from Leinster ahead of their big Champions Cup semi-final against Toulon at the weekend. A prop Tadhg Furlong will be further assessed for an injury, which saw him limp off in Italy during the URC defeat to Benetton at the weekend. That deepens their front row concerns ahead of the match against the French side, with Andrew Porter still a doubt. Ryan Bird has been ruled out of the game at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday, along with Charlie Tector, who picked up a shoulder knock in that Benetton match. Now, the good news is that James Lowe, who has been out with a groin injury since playing against England in the Six Nations, is back training on the grass, along with Jordan Larmour and Dermot Mangan. Meanwhile, Tom O'Toole, Nick Timoney and Jude Postlethwaite are all available for selection ahead of their chance for Ulster's Challenge Cup semi-final with Exeter Chiefs. Callum Reid, though, and Ben Carson are out, with Eric O'Sullivan also a doubt, and a decision will be made later this week on Angus Bell, Bryn Ward and James Hume.
Will you give us the marathon news, finally?
Yes. Sebastian Saw won the London Marathon in a world record time on Sunday, becoming the first person in history to officially record a sub 2 hour race. The Kenyan won the race 12 months ago and then successfully defended his title in a time of 1 hour 59 minutes and 30 seconds. He wiped 65 seconds off the previous record held by the late Kelvin Kiptum, who did so at the 2023 Chicago Marathon. Saw's time is 10 seconds quicker than Eliud Kipchoge's record in 2019, which was not recognised as official because it was not an open competition, and he was assisted by pacemakers. Ireland's Peter Lynch produced a superb run, breaking his own Irish record to come home ninth in 2 hours 6 minutes 0.8 seconds.
This is incredible. If you're going to feel sorry for anybody today, you got to feel sorry for Nike. After all the work that they've done on this subject over the years, it is Adidas who have sponsored the two guys who finished one and two. So they obviously had Saway,
a bouncy runner,
as you mentioned there, Kachelcha, who finished second in his first ever marathon, competitive marathon, breaks the 2 hour barrier as well. So the Adidas Adios Pro 3 super shoes are the ones. They weren't available last night, which maybe is a bit of a a screw up. Maybe you should have them available for people to buy there and then. They are available possibly now, if not after midnight tonight. You can buy them for €500.
So it's either that or
a Ryder Cup ticket, basically, is your option if you want to invest. They weigh 97.27 grams, and the Adidas marketing around this has been magnificent. But you have to say, and you have to doff your cap to Nike, a classy bunch of individuals that they are. They posted about the two-hour barrier being smashed, despite the fact that one and two were Adidas, saying the clock has been reset. There is no finish line. So fair play to them for saying that about the Adidas. I mean, it is deep, right? I mean, it will bring a tear to a glass eye. Peter Lynch, for what it's worth, was wearing a Puma Fast R3s. And apparently there was loads of people wearing those Pumas who weren't sponsored by Puma. And that would suggest that those Puma shoes are pretty good. Like, we'll hopefully do a piece on this as the week goes on. But Steve Cram on the BBC immediately compared this to Roger Bannister's 4 minute mile. And I wonder if this is going to be considered that ilk. I think it possibly is. It's something that we've spoken about for a number of years. And obviously there's been some non-legal ways that people have gone about doing this. But for this to happen in London, which by all accounts is nowhere near as fast a track as Berlin or as Chicago, it was unexpected on that front. But I believe there was a good tailwind in the second half of the race, which allowed him to do this. Like, one of the big questions regards how clean he is. And what I find fascinating about this is that Adidas have spent €50,000 on supporting his doping tests, where there were 25 doping tests done, according to his coach, in the build-up to the Berlin Marathon this season. So Saway has been under the microscope, not just from the world and from any cynical observer out there, but also from Adidas themselves. I'm not sure, is it a healthy relationship that, a clothing brand should be paying for your doping tests? Mm. Maybe that's up to you, but there's a healthy dose of cynicism out there, as I think.
Like, see him doing a pair of goalies.
There you go. Yeah, right, yeah. That'll be the next
quick guard then, Paul.
Yeah, it's Bannister, Saway, and then whoever the next person is in a pair of goalies. That'll be the way to do it. Stephen Doyle, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Mick and Arthur, thanks for popping in. Cheers. We'll be chatting to Darren O'Sullivan after the break to talk Gaelic football. The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 ml tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.